I'm sure on step three. Welcome, Regina. Come on in.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you, lovely. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I'm Regina. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I live in San Francisco. And a few things. First of all, I'm gonna try to slow down. I'm nervous, and when I'm nervous, I tend to speed up, and you know that's not helpful. Let's just enjoy this moment together. And before I get running into the matter at hand, I want to say thank you to Boston Beacon Group. Though I'm not here all the time, it's 9 o'clock on the West Coast. And so when I'm working, I can't be in this meeting. But when I come in, I always learn something. So I really appreciate, the thought and care that goes into, having people come and talk to us about these steps. And it is a tremendous privilege to be here today, as a sober woman and sitting in this seat in this community. So, I leave it to you to decide how I did or didn't do, whatever. But thank you. It really means a lot to me to be here. I am going to invite you all to join me in a deep breath with an audible exhale. You certainly don't have to, but one of the ways that I've learned to connect my body and my mind is to check where my breath is. And I'm a little breathless. So on the count of three, I'm going to do a deep inhale and an audible exhale. So here we go. One, two, three. Thank you so much. Now my shoulders are no longer attached to my ears. That's helpful. I'd like to welcome the newcomers and also the retreads. You are in the right place. You're with the right people. And today is the right time. And you're going to hear all of us say this. Please just stay with us. You're on the start of an incredible journey, and we need you with us on the journey. It's definitely reciprocity. I get to be here because you're here, and that really matters, because if I wasn't here, I don't know where I'd be. The truth is, given our disease, I could be dead, and that's no joke. So please stay with us. And we are going to break out into smaller rooms later. And one of the lovely things about that is it took me a long time to get into Zoom. And a year and a half ago, right around Easter, I had a crisis in my program. And I started coming to Zoom and everything changed. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. But, by participating in the little breakout rooms, just to say hello, I notice like when I talk a little bit, it helps open up my ears. There's a magical connection there. And we want to hear from you. So no pressure. And you can always use the old excuse, oh, my sponsor told me to raise my hand. That works too. So this is a very friendly and welcoming group. So thank you for being here. Finally, I do want to say that if you don't hear anything else today, the most important thing that I have to express today is that my way didn't work, but AA's way does. So, engage curiosity and give it your best. A year I have, excuse me, logistically, my sober anniversary is July 28, 2007. I am a retread. I originally came into the rooms in 1984. I'm going to talk a little bit about that more as I get into the step. But it's just, the fact that I got to come back, reclaim a chair, And I would say at about my first year anniversary, it hit me on a very deep level that I was impossibly lucky. I mean, those of us who go out and get to reclaim this chair and sit in it, and it's been 16 years now, have had an experience that is filled with grace and mercy, and I am no different in that sense. So I'm very glad to be here. I want to start with a little something that a sponsor who walked me line by line through this book had me do right away. And this, as I say, was about a year and a half ago, Easter, was look at, there's a statement on, if you have the notebook style where you can, you know, take a lot of notes, it's on 184, but it's a statement by attributed to Herbert Spencer. And briefly, it says, "We find that no one have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable." And what I experience on a daily basis is that willingness. I am willing to grow, willing to learn. And I have to tell you, on the humble, it's not happening on my timeline. I'd be there already. You know, I'd be levitating off the ground if it were up to me. And believe me, my little butt's in a seat. So. but there's just, there is so much in this program and in this material. There's always more to learn. There's more to deepen. And those are the rewards of my willingness is, you know, I get to be a sober woman in this life and I am continually growing. And I, you know, my opinion, I feel the whole point of drawing breath is to grow. I really do. My plan, this plan is up until the last exhale, I hope I'm on a growth path. And so far that seems to be the case. Just to give you a little snapshot, excuse me, of the current moment. I have a lot of questions and I'm also making connections. And one of the things that that feels good about having questions is being able to be comfortable with the fact that I don't have answers and I don't have to have answers. I certainly can look at our material, say prayers, you know, reference the material, speak with the members of this community about what your experiences are, but I can sit a little more comfortably with the mystery. And I mean, you know, some of the bigger mysteries of life, why, you know, things don't go the way I plan. And we're going to be talking about that in this step and having some peace with it. You know, I realize, finally, that I am part of something so much bigger, and I am a part of it. I have a role to play in it, and I'm not really in charge of that role. At this point, showing up and asking and listening for directions is really important. I do not do this perfectly. Please understand, there is no perfection happening here. I am a full-on fallible human being. But again, that willingness to come back, to ask the questions, to take some time, to be uncomfortable, you know, that does get a little bit easier over time. And I'm really grateful for that. So where we've come on this journey is, you know, we've had people talk about step one, step two, and step two, especially the chapter We Agnostics, is really beautiful. You know, I am certainly a person who had all those little loves, you know, looking at a starry night or the ocean or flowers and, you know, really wondering, you know, who made this? What was the point? And I'll tell you a funny thing. On Sundays, I also attend a big book study called Never Too Early. and we do paragraph readings of the big book. And I am in, we just completed a fourth step with this group. And I have to tell you something. Again, I referenced earlier about a year and a half ago, I had a big change in my program. And I found this group and I've stayed with them. And I never thought in a million years that I would actually be working on a four-step inventory with about 400 other people. But it's true. That is, you know, the quality and the caliber of that workshop is, you know, they've had old timers there for, you know, 20, 30 years. I've been there. I've had two soberversaries with them about a year and a half, but I'm, you know, willing to do this work. And by the way, this is probably about my 14th or 15th inventory. So I've been to the circus a few times, but what's happened in this room is, you know, there is just a quality of truth-telling, honesty, and vulnerability. And what it allowed me to do was dig in deeper, you know, and revisit some items on my own inventory that I thought were, you know, done deals, and they weren't. And that was because I was able and willing to hear, you know, those of us in these rooms speak up and tell the truth about what their experiences are. And so, of course, you know, before you get to four, there's two and three. And one of the things that's happening for me is I'm really, I'm having an experience, and it's much deeper and it's very different. A lot of light bulbs are coming on. And I want to say to everybody, please don't ever give up. You never know, you know, when that light bulb is going to turn on. And it just, I am on the slow bus. That's just the way it is. But I'm here. So, you know, I really want to encourage you, because when things start popping up, it's really incredible. And what the connections that I'm seeing now are like, you know, it's funny. I was asked to talk about the third step, and I just did a fifth step a week ago today. And I had a conversation about the fourth step with somebody like a week and a half ago. And I finally understood for myself that in three, where we're starting to confront what our will, what our self-centeredness, what our selfishness, our collision with absolutely everything has created in reality, we get the evidence of why we can no longer be directors and managers doing four through six. You know, when I looked at six and my defects, the light bulbs were like, oh my God, these are the reasons why when I did three, I gave up the director and management business. You know, I had a sense of it while I was going through this, but it becomes more real as we continue to move through these steps. And, you know, I will say another experience and understanding that I'm having about this third step is three is a foundational springboard that connects not only to four through six, seven, but it's also a big connector to 10. And I am a person who does the daily inventory. I ask those 10 questions. And in step 10, there's going to be some conversation about the actor yet again. And in fact, that term is used a few times. So I'm just, you know, really seeing how these pieces, they're, you know, yes, they're laid out in a linear fashion. And in fact, you know, when we've wrapped up number two and we've looked at some of what our old ideas of God were, and I want to come back to, I had mentioned never too early, because as we were going through two, and there's that example about the Wright brothers, I thought, oh my God, I would have been one of those people who said they couldn't fly, it'll never happen, because I really wanted to hang on to my old ideas. And it was really stunning and very funny. Thank God we can laugh at ourselves in these rooms to see that. But as we come through two, we are, you know, we come into three, And it's kind of funny that what happens in three is we get the whole 12 in how it works. It lays out the 12 steps. We get three pertinent ideas. And then it says, now we are, you know, we're convinced and we're at step three. And I just went, oh my God, I just like digested the 12 things I'm going to be doing, or I'm trying to. And these three basically say that I can't, no one else could, but God could and would. And that's a big chunk to digest. You know, we could stop there and pause for a little bit and look at the evidence of that. So I want to, I'm going to spin the dial back a little bit because I am a retread. I did come in 84. And I want to talk a little bit about my experience at that time. This particular step is the one thing that probably stands out the most to me from that time. I was 25, just so that, you know, a little background about me. I was a blackout drunk. And the year before I came into the rooms, I was doing my version of what I later learned was the chapter on more on alcoholism. I had not always been a blackout drunk. I started drinking with a purpose. And I really mean that. When I was 19, I had made a suicide attempt that was not romantic. I didn't leave notes. I didn't make phone calls. I was in a moment where I just thought, what is the point of this? And I didn't have a good enough answer for that. So it was 1978. I was born and raised in San Francisco. It was easy to find pills, you know, get some wine. And in fact, it was really cute. The dealer I bought the pills from made up a great story. He said, oh, you're going to, you know, have a party with your friends and, you know, you just want to have some downers. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. So that was not what I was doing. But anyway, all to say that, you know, obviously the attempt failed. And when I woke up in the hospital, and I woke up in a fury, and I had a fury that I really did not know that I had. And my waking thought, I'm going to tell you, I had a really weird message. You know, while I was right before I came to, I heard a very loud voice say, this is not your time. And I snapped awake. And I was furious. That didn't make me happy. I didn't feel comforted by that. I felt like, well, what the hell is this? I can't drop dead, but still, what am I doing? I have no clue. And so what is my response to that moment? My response to that moment is to, I'm just going to drink. Screw it. And so when I say I drank with a purpose, I just felt like, well, okay, I don't know where the voice came from. Don't know what that's about, but I just poured alcohol on it. A little stranger is, I was not, I think it's important to share this. I did come from a very dysfunctional family. It was very violent. There was alcoholism, and I didn't realize the alcoholism part until I have one sibling, and when I was 9 months sober, then I brought him into the rooms and we started comparing notes. And that's how, you know, he was surprised. Like, I didn't recognize the alcoholism at all. And he gave me plenty of evidence, and that's what opened my eyes to it. But all to say that, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I wasn't nipping at the bottles. I wasn't, you know, smoking pot. That's what we did then. I didn't have any curiosity for me. But the seeds were planted, and this is really important. The seeds definitely were planted. It is very clear to me that, you know, where I came from is not the reason why I manifested my disease, but the seeds were here. And also, in the third step, you know, it talks about will, it talks about being in collision with everything and everyone. And I believe those seeds were planted at exactly the same time too. So I was just waiting to blossom. So when I came out of that, when I woke up from that suicide attempt, oh boy, did I come to blossom in a hurry and a fury. And so anyway, I wind up, you know, drinking. I am able to hold down a job. I live alone. I left home when I was 17. You know, I had my own apartment. I was able to manage financially. But I drank kind of like the housewife. You know, I'd show up, go to work, but come home, lock the door and, you know, get my scotch out. And that was the kind of drinker I was. There was a little bit of socializing in it, not a lot, because sexual assault is a part of my story. I was really afraid of that. And so being at home was also safe. Also being in San Francisco at that time, I did have gay and lesbian friends. And so sometimes I would go to those bars and, you know, we could just party and I felt safe. I was, you know, I didn't feel like I was going to be attacked, and I wasn't, you know, that's the truth of my experience. There is a lot of grace in my story, a lot of grace and mercy. So by the time, anyway, I'm 24, I'm definitely blacking out, and the blackouts really frightened me. So I conduct for about a year my research on, you know, as I say, what I learned was chapter three, more on alcoholism, and it doesn't work. Well, actually, let me say this. I think I want to be very clear about this. I wanted to control my drinking. And so what I would do is, if I were in a social situation, you know, I would be in parties or with other people, and I was constantly looking at how much did you have in your glass? How much were you drinking? You know, and trying to measure and maintain my drinking that way. So was that any fun? No, it certainly was not. But during that year, for reasons that I don't know, I don't need to know, I didn't black out. And what happened was, right around the time I turned 25, I'm dating someone, of course, who's, you know, actually an alcoholic who is substituted with pot. And he, during one of our breakups, gets a nudge from the judge and he's got to go to AA. I start going to AA meetings with him, and I'm like crying because these people are so honest and I'm really moved by the shares and yada, yada, yada. We would call that now identifying. I told you I'm slow, but you know, I went, we split up and, you know, life goes on, but I'm still conducting the experiment. And one day I buy a couple of bottles of wine and say, I'm going to, you know, drink one and cook with the other. Well, I wake up the very next morning and both of the bottles are empty in the trash bin and no one was with me. And I had been slashing at my wrist too. So, you know, it was not pretty. And the next morning I get up and I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. And I walk through the doors of AA. And I did all the things. Somebody handed me a big book, and in 1984, we were just getting answering machines. So, you know, you passed your book around the room, you collected phone numbers, you made phone calls. And I did the deal to the best of my ability. And I was happy to be there. That was no joke because, you know, I'm a young person and people are having a good time. And, you know, so I'm going to studies and you know, really actually, you know, having a social life for the first time. It's incredible. And I'm doing the steps and I do one and two. And what I remember viscerally is what happened when I came to three. You know, in step three, we are asked to make a decision to turn our lives and our will over to the care of God as we understand Him. I would say my feet got in the mud and you could see the skid marks. I just, you know, I grew up in I grew up in the Catholic Church. It was very patriarchal. And though I did learn to pray, and prayer was very important to me, I have always been a spiritual seeker. That's true about, you know, who I am. I just went, whoa, you know, what is this God? And I'm turning over whatever will I have, and it's not a lot in my life to him. That's a big ask. And I really struggle with that step. And I didn't struggle for a long time, because it was clear to me that, you know, what I was doing, drinking and trying to control it, had not worked. So when I came in willing, you know, that's for sure. I had a sponsor right away. But I remember this step really, you know, I had to examine, well, who was God? What did that mean to me? And, you know, at that time, it was still the great patriarch scorekeeper. And that was not going to be a God that I could trust to turn my will and my life over to. And I don't, you know, honestly, in Bill's story, Ebby tells Bill that he can, you know, how about choosing a God of your own conception? I don't remember that from that time. So I knew that the patriarch wasn't going to work, but I was willing to examine it. I was willing to do some work. I certainly had some encouragement from the community that I was in. And it was a worthy struggle. It was a worthy struggle. So I want to say to people who are new or just coming back, or even old timers who are still examining our ideas, because this God, as I understand him, is constantly deepening and evolving for me. And I feel like that's exactly the way it should be. You know, I started off by saying that one of the gifts has been that I'm more comfortable with mystery, and I don't have to have everything painted out, you know, in a color by color painting anymore. But it's okay. If that's where you're at, that's where you're at. You know, this is a journey, and I don't want to disrespect anybody's, religious practices or beliefs. I have been introduced to a lot, and I'll talk a little bit more about that too. So there are many, many roads to get on, but, coming to this, you know, understanding of God is tremendous, and it's been, an experience of growth and learning and change that's actually been really beautiful and quite nourishing for me. So I wish all of you that. I will say, all right, so I want to come back to this thing. I wound up, you know, I did work the steps. I stayed involved in the program for about 4 years. I was quite happy in it. You know, honestly, that was the truth. A lot of wonderful things were happening. And because I am a person who is a spiritual seeker by nature, I graduated myself. Let me just cut to the chase. I graduated myself. I thought, well, you know, things are going really well. This is a spiritual program. I'm spiritual. I'm going to be okay and carry on. So I don't have a horror story to tell you. What wound up happening is I, for almost 20 years, stayed clean and sober. I did have a spiritual practice. And in fact, I had a few. Some really wonderful things happened during that time. I was in a long-term marriage, and oh God, 5 minutes. Oh, we got to wrap this up. I'm going to say things worked out until I met my strange mental blank spot in 2006. I was going through a divorce. It came back, and here, my brother, who I brought in the program all those years ago, I wound up telling that I was drinking and smoking, inhaling again. And he said, Reg, why don't you just go back to AA? I was not happy to hear that. But guess what? 3 weeks later, got myself into a seat, looked around that meeting and realized that it had been the spiritual program that I had been seeking the entire time. And so in terms of, I do want to talk a little bit about collision. I said those seeds had been planted a long time ago. You know, one of my first prayers to God when I was a five-year-old was, please get me out of this family because this is a mistake. This is the wrong group. And as we all learn, God is not Santa Claus. And those, yeah, none of my wishes came true. You know, I had to walk through it. And I got very devious and secretive in my family because I was, you know, it was about safety. I was dealing with a human being who was dangerous, who had rage, who was violent. And so in order to survive that, I cultivated a few habits, which later turned into selfishness, self-centeredness, and with a very strong line of self-pity. You know, it was a tough story, but as I've learned, all of us in this room have tough stories and experience suffering to significant degrees. And so we're not excused. But I did come away with the idea that my ideas were going to work best for everyone. And I have a mouth. And I will tell you what I think, whether I'm invited to or not. And one of the things about doing this step and the 10th step and the 11th step and staying on this road is I have learned how to hit that pause button. And I've also gained enough trust in a power greater than myself to be able to step back in numerous situations and actually ask myself, I wonder how God is going to write this chapter. You know, what is God going to bring to this? And I have been able to collect over the years now a lot of amazing things that I could never have imagined and would have screwed up had I insisted on running my course. And it's been messy. You know, please let me be very clear. I think the area of work, relationships, and certainly some personal relationships have had a lot of consequences for my self-centeredness and, you know, my thinking that, you know, my way is the right way. And what has been incredible and a big changer is I say this third step prayer every single morning. I say this prayer before my eyes open because my mind is on the attack right away. And so it's this third step prayer. And these two lines relieve me of the bondage of self. And that bondage shows up in all kinds of cunning, baffling, and devious ways about, you know, what is right for everybody, what I should or shouldn't do. And then, you know, may I add one thing to the final line on that step is, may I do thy will always. I say, may I seek and do thy will always, because it's important for this little mind and spirit to be looking and listening for where God can insert itself into whatever moment I need to be paying attention to. So to intentionally ask for the seeking is really important. I did wind up doing the third step prayer with the person who took me through the book line by line a year ago. It was a really beautiful experience. I know that everybody has a different way of coming to this step. When I came back in 2006, I was a practicing Buddhist involved in a sangha. That's actually been true for most of my sobriety. But again, I don't have problems with the concept of God, listening to other people's experiences of a God, a beloved, a creator. You know, there's so many ways we can connect with this source of power. So I think my time is probably up. And I just, you know, again, thank you for asking me to be here. Thank you for being here so I can be here and be a sober woman today. And thank you for taking that breath. You know, the one thing I do know is that I don't create my breath. And that can be a good starting place. So thank you so much. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Regina. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership.